Hi everyone, and welcome back to the Internet Report, where we uncover what's working and what's breaking on the internet and why. Now, in honour of Halloween, we're here with a special episode here with some of our spookiest networking stories. Now, when I say spooky, what we really want to do is actually sort of not scary as such, but we actually want to do with explain where things where didn't quite go as we'd as planned, and important lessons we'd actually learned from those. So pull up a chair and a big bowl of your favourite Halloween candy and hear what happened and discuss helpful takeaways. I'm Mike Hicks, Principal Solutions Analyst and host of the Internet Report's Pulse Update series, and I'm joined by my good friend and colleague Kamal Shankta, Principal Internet Analyst here at ThousandEyes. How are you, Kamal?
All good, my friend. Thanks for having me back at the podcast. It's awesome to be here. I always have a thrill talking to you.
That's always good. That's good. Now, before we start, Kamal, are you a trick or a treat person? That's what I've got to ask.
Treat. Always treats, my friend.
Always a treat. I thought that. I actually had that about you. So I actually got you some here. So I'll just sort of send those across to you so you've actually got those coming.
Yeah, I'm going to get them in like 2 months' time or something like that, given the distance between us.
Bear in mind, I'm in the future, so you'll get them before they've even left. So that's the way to go. And so with that, let's dive into the stories. We're going to include chapter links in the description box below so you can skip ahead to the sections that are most interesting to you. And as always, we'd love you to hit like and subscribe, and always feel free to email us at internetreport@thousandeyes.com. We always welcome your feedback and questions. Okay, so here we are. Picture the scene, Kamal. It's a dark, scary night. And then things that actually go bump in the night. Although outages do occur at the most inopportune moments, I think we've actually got to recognise is that they do happen sort of the time. And as we said in the sort of intro there, it's not that we're actually looking at when they're scary or spooky types of things. These are sort of mishaps that happen. And what I want to sort of take you through and discuss with you here today is sort of ones that I've personally experienced. And I'm old. There's many of them, unfortunately. So we've all gone through these times there. So the first one I want to talk about really is let me give you a bit of a background to this. So this was for a multinational company. They had deployments all over the world, but they also had deployments that were sort of out in the ocean. Right? So this was an oil platform we're actually sort of looking at from there. So you can imagine that's connected into there. Now, there's a very critical application they were actually running, and this was to sort of check the manifest for the helicopter. So, and that's the passengers are going out from there. Now, the problem behind this was the manifest couldn't be guaranteed. If they couldn't guarantee the manifest, then they weren't allowed to get on the helicopter. If they couldn't get on the helicopter, they couldn't do a shift change, so the people couldn't come off the platform. Now, I don't know if you ever actually had the fortune to actually go onto one of these things, but it's really hard work. And due to safety mechanisms, these guys can't work sort of any longer than the period they're there, and they have to sort of come off. Now, if they exceed that time, what they have to do is shut the platform down. And you have to remember at this moment, they have all the logistics of getting the product off there. So they have ships lined up. So it's really sort of tight timeline. So you can imagine what happens if we can't guarantee, we can't change crews on here. Now, this has been going on for many months by the time that I was actually involved in this situation. And what it turned out to be, and we actually identified it pretty quickly, but when we went in there, what they were doing, they were running an interior gateway routing protocol. So they were running an IGRP within this environment for their network. So it was a private network out from there. So remember, we're talking on a platform, so we're connected by a satellite connection out from there. Now, what was then happening in sort of very raw terms was they had a, because this was a satellite connection, it was kind of a little bit flaky. And they'd included that connected network to this stub network into this dynamic routing table from there. They then had a mismatch of hello timers and hold down timers. So what was happening was this system was sort of disappearing sporadically. So it's having these brownouts. So we actually couldn't connect to it, but even though everything looked up, you could get to the router, everything actually looked up around these times. So what we were able to quickly identify this after sort of months of going was because we actually look at this holistically. We're able to sort of take a step back and say, okay, what's the, and we talked about, you know, I've talked this many times, I'm a man of patterns. What's happening from here? If I look at the times that are going on here, what I saw was this repeated pattern of 90 seconds. So it was coming down here and it was actually unavailable for that time, which straight away to me, I'm going, okay, that is some sort of routing protocol. It's a hold down timer because of the uniformity of it. It was a light there. But then I was able to sort of bring that back into context. So we say, okay, when this is occurring, what's going on from here? And then what's happening is, was actually, why are we getting this situation? Because this is a stub network. There's no need for it to be dynamically allocated. But the fact it was included in there, connected interface, and when you had discrepancies with the satellite connection, it was sort of dropping out. And therefore, there was going to this whole down time, it's trying to recalculate the routes. So things weren't going to a black hole. They were going to sort of this brown hole. But by taking a step back and actually looking at the outage pattern with understanding the configuration, we were able to sort of quickly identify what was going on. It took a little while for me to convince them this was what was happening, because every time they took a step back, they were looking in isolation. They looked at the router config, looks good. Look at this router config, looks good. As I said, it was happening sporadically because you had this outside condition of the satellite conditions, which were coming in and out on top of this configuration. So it's just bringing things together.
So for how long did the issue last, this particular event?
Yeah, it's a really good question. It had been going on for 3 months. So it wasn't all the time. It was just really, you know, and again, you're fully aware of this, there's different weather conditions can impact the satellites and sort of the connectivity. So it was almost seasonal. So, and because it was intermittent, they weren't aware if it was happening. So it actually, if I took it at total time, it'd been going sort of for 3 months before we got involved to actually sort of look at it. And very simply, what we're able to do, as I said, is just visualize the path and then take other conditions happening at the same time.
And that's actually quite fascinating. The thing is, like, if you look at the issue just from the, you know, routing protocol perspective, in that particular case, IGRP, and, you know, you look at the hold on timers and you, like, you know, check all the timers, you know, K values and stuff like that, if they are configured, it would be really hard to figure out. Like, I'm actually, you know, not surprised that what you were seeing and the pushback that you were getting from the field, you know, it's kind of normal, you know. That's why it's really important to have this holistic view. Like, you know, you kind of like step back to look at the big picture and identify that, yes, well, the protocol is working the way it's supposed to and the way it's designed to, you know. It's actually a picture that's influenced heavily by this external factor called satellite connectivity, which can, and, you know, to your point, seasonally does influence the connectivity in way it represents itself.
5 minutes it really took us to identify, because we actually hit that hold down timer pretty early on, and I was looking at the entire path during that process.
Exactly. And then the other thing is, like, if you look at these things, like, to your point, patterns are really important, right? So having something like the timeline is part of which you can actually look at the, you know, wider range of time, so to say, like, you know, so that you can identify, okay, this is happening during these hours, or this is happening during this part of the year, for that matter, like, really helps. Like, visualizing things always helps us humans, you know, to see the what's potentially going on. That's like, you know, what that reminded me of is actually, you know, daily patterns. So, for example, if you are working 9 to 5, you know, you're going to see this, like, daily pattern of utilization, you know. And then what happens is that, like, during the, you know, peak office hours, you know, certain applications that are super popular, you know, within the organizations can actually have these issues that are a direct result of actually, you know, underskilled capacity being exhausted, right? So that's quite interesting. But yes, to us humans, like, we need to have, like, you know, something that's going to visually aid us in direction of resolution.
100%. A picture paints 1,000 words, so we can see what's going on there. And I said, I'm very simple. I want to look at a picture. What's changed? You know, I'm good at those. What, spot the difference. What's happened here? Is paper, newspapers upside down? So if I can quickly visualize this, what it's supposed to look like compared to here. And actually, that brings another good point up, is that, going back to me being very simple, is that if I look at those, why we're able to identify that so quickly was because it follows protocols, right? These are all protocols underneath there. Now, if we start to overlay those protocols on top, all I need to understand is, how's that protocol seem to operate? It's not operating, therefore, this is where the problem is. But again, as you said, that holistic perspective, so I bring them all together, and that's where I can see where the gaps are. You know, that, yes, you will sometimes get issues within a protocol where it's not behaving like it should do, but 99.9%, 5 nines of the time, it's going to, the protocol's going to follow the rules. So all I need to understand is that, where are those rules conflicting? between when I'm putting those protocols together.
Exactly. That's a really good one. Do you want to hear my story?
Absolutely, mate. Yeah, tell me.
Yeah. So over my career, I had the opportunity to work for some of the really large networks, multiscalers, in fact. And, you know, multiscalers have like their own set of problems. But this one is actually not that, far off from what field might be seeing, especially network engineers, like that are in the trenches on a daily basis, regardless of the size of the company. So we got once notification that certain vendor had a pretty big security related issue, as part of which we needed to upgrade our complete fleet, right? So yeah. The team was scrambled, people started working like, in a follow of the sun model, but obviously there were processes, like you just don't introduce the code base that was not tested before. So what we did is, we took the code that vendor provided, we put it in the lab, we run the typical protocol setups, like, we had like, at the time it was like BGP, it was it was ISIS and other like ISIS was used to advertise the loopbacks,
and then you were, using
and then we were like we were using these loopbacks to establish BGP sessions between the rest of the infrastructure. It was fairly normal setup, nothing too fancy, right? And the code base itself showed up really well, right? Like the fix was for the security related issues included in the release, and it was no risk of us actually having this rolled out in the production. So we rolled it out. For the multiscalers, this is where the interesting and challenging things come into play. Mm-hmm. Like they had thousands of devices that needed to get upgraded, right? So yeah. As you can imagine, first of all, like back then, the automation was still going quite slowly. I think there was inherent mistrust in letting some Python script upgrade your router, right? So. Yeah. People were like very cautious when it comes to that. So a lot of this work was done by, people. And people were following the method of procedure and MOPS, everything was working fine. And all of a sudden, we rolled out like this complete code release on 100% of the fleet and everything was working fine. Until we realized that, there's a memory leak in the code base. Like we look at the memory pattern, like maybe 1 month in after the release, right? We were actually quite happy with how it went. We were happy on, all the work that went in. Like there were no significant issues as such, nothing broke, and changing stuff in production always, there's always risk. So yep. We were fairly happy with how that went until we checked the SNMP graphs for memory utilization. And it was literally the staircase effect, as part of which you can see the memory going up. And then it was a scramble all over again to actually, work with the vendor. Vendor did not know what's happening, so they needed to investigate, which took some of the time. The time that it takes for them to investigate what's happening and, why is it going on is the time that we are losing on the memory because we need to upgrade this, right? Because if you stay out of memory, all sorts of bad things are going to happen. Yeah. So first of all, restarts can happen, right? So that's like really one of the things, but that's a clean state issue, right? If the memory goes out, your control plane stays out of the memory, which means that the protocols themselves don't work the way they are supposed to, which means that all of a sudden, like timers goes off and on, demons start behaving in a unpredictable way and stuff like that. We worked intensively with the vendor. We got a new code base and we rolled it out again, but where's the spooky story in this one? It wasn't as spooky as, there's a clear outage, but the spooky, thing here comes from the fact that we probably spent thousands of engineering hours, right, on the complete effort. First to, patch the security related issue. Then the second attempt to actually resolve the issue with the memory leak itself. It's what it is. I mean, these things happen. But overall, like, I think like what tells us is that it's really important to, you know, first of all, test stuff. And in this particular case, even though the we tested it in lab, right, we could not find it, because you need to take in consideration the fact that, you know, lab is never going to be as utilized as production environment, especially in this in these large enterprise and mass killers, right? The thing is, like, their routing tables are going to have much bigger number of prefixes, you know, number of policies are going to be significantly larger, you know, then you're going to have, like, you know, differences in between devices themselves, right? Like, you know, so some devices are like newer generation as a result of which they are faster. Some of their are older devices as part of which, you know, they're going to have problem processing the routing table at the same speeds and stuff like that. So obviously, like, we could not replicate the scale of the production environment in the lab, you know, but it just goes to say, like, how really important it is to have, like, proper monitoring set up, right? Like, you know, the fact that we were able to see, like, memory leak react in a way as part of, and engage the vendor in a way as part of which we did not have the larger scale outage on our hands really helped.
Yeah, absolutely. So there's a couple of things there, isn't there? There's, first of all, you should have just got a bucket, mate, and just put it under the rack to catch that memory leak. That's the first one. And then the second one is, if you'd have listened to the music going on in the background, you'd have known that's a spooky story. Don't go to that cabin. You know what's happening. But it is. It's a slow burn you got there. Like you said, there's no way that you could have actually predicted what was going to happen because it's a low. But you're right. Those patterns, you'd have seen that go retrospectively. But again, if I've got my monitoring there, I can see what's happening. And exactly what you said. Once we've got that, we know what action to take. We know what process to kick in there. But the other interesting thing I thought there was, you know, you sort of point back to allude to this fact then that the protocol, once we got these adverse conditions, these abnormal conditions, I should say, these abnormal conditions, we start to... that was me coming back to Mel Brooks's Young Frankenstein there for you. There, just a little chuck in another Halloween theme for Mr. Abby Normal. But once you have those abnormal conditions, what you start to consider is those protocols break. That's what I was saying before. When those protocols breaks, we know the rules that happen and we can do there. But as you said, in that situation, the impact could be quite disastrous because you start to get ungraceful closures, you get systems restarting, as you said, and it becomes really, really messy.
You know what, like, this, there are different categories of, you know, potentially related issues with the networking related stuff. So, for example, what we just spoke about is, like, yes, the protocol design and, you know, overall holistic picture from your scenario. In my scenario, it was just like issue that could have arisen from the upgrades itself, right? But there are also different types of issues, such as like configuration related issues, as part of which you are trying to achieve something only to realize that, you know, you had a configuration related error. Like, you know, that you did maybe a few years ago or something like that. Or the scary, like, there are some scary ones, like when you architect something, you know, solving for some problem only to introduce other problems. Those are the challenging ones. But there's a different categories of the problems that 100%. You can face when
dealing with it. Those slow burn ones are really scary. Those are the ones where they build the tension, and then it suddenly comes down. Those are the ones that slap you in the face sometime on a Tuesday afternoon when you sort of just about to go home. So one thing you said there, which I thought was really interesting, we were talking about you couldn't actually test that in pre-production. You couldn't know where you could sort of emulate those conditions because you couldn't get the load across from there. It's actually a great segue into my next story. So this is kind of a bit of an amalgamation of two stories because I've sort of seen this twice. You just thought I've learned the lesson the first time. But you know, fool me once, fool me twice, but there you go.
So, shame on you.
Exactly. So what happened in this situation was this was a massive rollout of an application, but it had been built up by one division within this organization. They've actually gone ahead from there. And the thing about the criticality of this was it was being a run across. This was, again, multinational, lots of places around the world where this is going to be rolled out. But this was almost a digitization of a fundamental process for this organization, right? This was something everybody had to use. This was something that would directly impact productivity, which would directly impact the business bottom line. So they built this thing and it was a lights on, lights off rollout. The first thing that happened is that no one could use it, became unusable. So as you went down, so after on the next day when it was actually up and going, even though the FAQs, the training had been in place, they actually had to roll this back out. And then we were sort of called in to actually have a look at what was going on. And what they hadn't done, or what they'd done, they'd actually baselined this in a almost within an incubator. So they'd baselined against local servers, or there were cloud servers, but it was local to where they were. It was just one user hitting it up, one from there. And that's fine, again, test that functionality. But these users distributed across the world. They were coming across internet connections. They were coming across different characteristics. Some were connecting by satellite links. Some of these locations were so remote they could only be got at by a geostationary satellite. So it was there with microwaves across some, which were in one case were set too low. So the tidal basin was dragging it down. Again, environmental conditions saw across in there. But the point is, this wasn't tested or validated in any other conditions except pristine vacuum conditions. So the minute it went out from there, and this was quite catastrophic, so it rolled back. So when they actually went through this another process again, what they started then to do is, okay, which is where we got involved, or where I got involved, and they said, can we baseline this? Let's baseline this. We wanted to baseline it. So again, I don't need to load this system up. I can just baseline this from distributed points around the world, basically where their locations are going to be. Mm-hmm. And that gives me an indicative perspective. I'm looking at a transaction. So I say, okay, I'm going to log on and load the page, right? This is what the users are going to be doing. And then I can actually set criteria. There's a couple of things that came from this. One, we identified some real black spots within their network where we're able to go in and actually isolate those and fix those, or mind in some cases changing ISPs or changing relationships they had from there. Others, it was actually picking different transmission type, sort of different ways to actually do that. Some instances, we actually sort of looked around, well, let's actually split the functionalities application and let's serve that locally out of a CDN or the equivalent of for those things there. So we're able to match the characteristics of the environment. But then the other thing that came out of it was that no matter what you did to this, you were never going to achieve the SLA they'd set in place or the KPI they'd set in place for this, because there was just no other way to get to this particular location. And this was the best that could ever be done because of the way the application was written and everything on lock. But we were able to identify that and then went back to the organization and said, okay, there's two things you can do here. One, you can readjust your SLA so that you match that, but that obviously going to have a direct impact on productivity on the users because this new app's supposed to be better, supposed to be quicker, more efficient, and so on from there. The second thing or you can do is you can try this, but here's the evidence. Go back to the manufacturer of the application and say, this is what's happening. We recommend you make this change to it. But half your luck, give it a go.
Which would delay application rollout by who knows how long.
Yeah, correct. But they actually went, they did go back to the vendor. So actually the first thing they did, exactly what you said, absolutely right. Let's get it up, let's get it going. So they actually just said, this is the expectation for this particular part of the world. This is what you're going to get. And we'll adjust our productivity expectations accordingly. But simultaneously to that, they then went to the manufacturer and said that this is what we're seeing. Mm-hmm. And here's the empirical evidence to say what we're seeing across here. Anything you can do about it? And they went, yep. And literally, they just changed the cache value. So they actually just changed the rather than a timeout to there. So it was never then, it was always then served locally. And that dropped it by 5 seconds to a particular location. All of a sudden, everybody came into the same performance stuff there. So I said, so lessons
that's
learned
actually
there.
That's a pretty nice fix, yeah.
Yeah. Lessons learned were just testing pre-prod. and we don't need a full operating system, but let's test ahead of time so that when we roll out, we're not going to have a problem.
Yeah. So actually, that reminds me of that age-old joke about the software developer saying, like, oh, it works on my computer, right? Yeah. The thing is, like, if you test it in isolation, right? Yeah. If you test it in isolation on the infrastructure that you built, like, in the pristine and vacuum conditions, of course it's going to work, right? The performance in real world is significantly different, right? To your point, like, the customers are coming from the various angles of the world where the connectivity is not working, you know, as optimally as potentially from your, you know, place or from the, you know, setup that you were testing it from. To your point, like, you know, tests more broadly, you know, include other, you know, this is also why it's really important to actually have, you know, people from diverse backgrounds in your teams, right? You know, if it was more broad group of people, you know, who could have said, like, you know, let's test it out from this scenario or that scenario, this wouldn't have happened in the first place. That's why having 100%. The diverse set of backgrounds really helps always.
Yeah, absolutely. And it, because there is local conditions that you don't know about. You know, like, so exactly. I've worked all around the world, and my design methodologies for Europe are completely different to when I have to come to APJC, because I've got different distances involved. There's things that I just physically can't achieve there. So you have to think of different ways. But then you have other environmental conditions that are taking place. You know, so even when I was in Germany, so we'd adapted Ethernet cables. this is bad. We'd adapted Ethernet cables for a particular environment there, but we're using old Tokarin cables, so the old LAMs and CAMs. So we were using those, but the twisted core weren't enough, but they were also going across the window sills in these. So when we're in sort of middle Germany, so when in the summertime it got quite hot, the attenuation went through the roof, the signal dropped, right? So it's these other conditions you weren't considering. And exactly. That's local knowledge that could have helped. Like you say, if I get all these stakeholders involved, then they can actually put all these valid inputs. Well, did you know that, you know what, we can only get fixed wireless in this location? Ah, okay. That's actually...
And that's the other thing, like, you know, there's a lot, in our industry, there's a lot of tribal knowledge, right?
Yes.
There's, like, things that you are just supposed to know, and then generation changes, right? And all of a sudden, like, new generation does not have that insight from the previous generations, and you're like, okay. Like, and then we kind of tend to repeat certain mistakes, you know, all over again. I'm not saying that this is a mistake, but, well, like, if you look at the architectural trends when it comes to, various designs, right? Not necessarily just network designs. Like, we went from decentralized to decentralized, and then we are again like, oh yeah, decentralized is really hard, let's go back to centralized. And, you know, from sometime in the future, people are going to be saying, like, oh yeah, like, you know, we should really have this decentralized, you know. Or like, for example, if you look at the architectural network design, like, we went from the, you know, cloth fabric designs that were introduced for the phone networks, right? Which were really good for what they were designed for. And then we went to, like, you know, three-tier design, like access distribution core. And they were like, you know, like, it's really hard to scale this. Let's actually try to go back to the cloth design because that scales much better. Like, we get, like, much more capacity and stuff like that. That's really, really fascinating how certain things are, you know, repeating.
It is, and they're repeating, but also I think we're at a stage now where all of a sudden is the user requirements are driving the technology. So we're having this state where, again, I did a lot of work with ATM, we bonded ATM circuits because we just need to get the bandwidth up. I love the deterministic nature of having the cells all the same size. It was there, but it was, you know, it didn't always work as it needed to be. But today I've got this situation where I'm having to, like, the whole cloud stuff we're getting coming up and the way then that, because we have these nebulous boundaries, as it were, these dynamic nebulous boundaries, the hybrid workaround from there. I have no perimeter. I don't, yeah, you know, it'd be hard to centralize, because what do I centralize on these days? So the technology, as I'm saying, is now driving it. My requirement is that digital equity, I want the same access, same service. So now the technology has to catch up with my requirements, and it is there in place. You know, so it's those are driving it. Whereas before, I think we had a little bit of the, not quite the cart before the horse, but to a degree, you know, this is a good design. Oh, it doesn't scale. Let's switch back to this one. Whereas now, we're almost having to design dynamically. And like I said, the requirements are driving that technology, and the technology is having to keep up.
So yeah, you're right. Like, you know, a lot of these things are driven by the customer demands, and, you know, and that's going to be changing, and we're going to see, resurfacing of the things that we actually thought that were done, but like maybe just wrapped in different paper, so to say.
Exactly.
So I have ordered a story to tell you, Mike. Well, I have unfortunately plenty of them to tell you, so which is probably going beyond the scope of what we are trying to do here, which actually prompts me, we should probably have, another episode similar to this one. But the story that I wanted to tell you here is regarding the... a company that I used to work for, it was like very famous enterprise application. I was a network engineer, and so we came there, and they were saying like, we are seeing the degradation of the application, but fundamentally they did not know what was happening, you know. So everyone like was all hands on the deck, you know, everyone is trying to do, they are checking sessions, they are checking timers, they are checking whether everything's working fine. And, you know, like, it's looking good, but the application is struggling, and we can see the dashboards, like, you know, quite clearly indicating that, you know, something is not working the way it's supposed to, you know. And, you know, sometimes it's really important to actually step outside of your network engineering, world, and put the different hat on, right? In this particular case, actually, I took like the approach of like, you know, it's not obvious that it's a network related issue. So, you know, what is this all about? So I actually went on the server itself and I captured TCP dump. You know, they use Linux servers all around, like, you know, typical enterprise grade application, you know, running on Linux. And, you know, I started going through the PCAP, and PCAP indicated a lot of broadcast. So I raised my hand and said, like, you know, guys, I think we are dealing here with potentially pretty large broadcast a storm. Right.
Yeah,
now, obviously, one of the leading points to me getting onto the server itself is the fact that that data center where the issue was observed was a pretty large L2 network, like layer 2 network.
Yeah.
Right. So I raised my hand and I quite clearly remember saying, like, yeah, I think like we might be dealing with a broadcast storm. And people were like, you know, yeah, like, yes, you are seeing a lot of broadcasts, but we don't have the baseline. And I'm like, you know, that's a fair point, but this feels like a lot of broadcasts, right?
Yeah.
And they're like, no, we don't have baseline. So there was kind of like pushback on that one. And while they were actually investigating what's happening from the networking perspective, and as to my point earlier on, like that was pretty much cleaned, right? I actually focused on figuring out what's the rate of this broadcast that I'm seeing, you know? So I actually identified really neat tool on Linux that, you know, looks at the PCAP file taken by the TCP dump, and it can actually give you the rate of certain types of traffic inside of it. So I actually pointed it out for the ICMP, given the fact that I was suspecting that it's like, you know, broadcast storm, and it outputted 170 megabits of traffic within 1 minute of megabits of traffic within like...
What was your baseline that I took? What was your baseline? 106.
So I was like, you know what? Like, I raised my hand and said, like, you know what? Like, I understand that we don't have the baseline for the broadcast traffic, but at the same time, 170 megabits of broadcast is pretty hard and pretty high amount of broadcast for any kind of environment. Like, even if you run everything on the ICMP, and, you know, they kind of caved in, you know. And you know how it goes with the layer two network, regardless of how good your SDP is, and regardless of the fact that you have your root bridges selected and deterministically configured and everything. It just takes someone in the data center to connect like one Ethernet cable to something that it's not supposed to be connected. And is actually what happened. Someone probably just like, I don't think we ever actually got to the root cause of what triggered this particular broadcast storm. But given the fact that it was fairly a large enterprise network, once it started really badly. So, we applied that really nice fix of actually turning down every single redundant uplink on every single rack. That's not dangerous at all, in a fashion of like spookiness of this particular particular podcast. But the thing is, like, it was really bad. We managed to get it under the control, and I actually took a value for the amount of traffic for the ICMP, and it was 13 kilobytes. I remember quite clearly, like 13 kilobytes of broadcast versus 170 megs. Like, it just tells you how bad the storm was, right? So, if you were to ask me what are the lessons, like, and if you know me, as a network engineer and, as a colleague, I know you know me. The thing is, like, I'll just gonna always tell you, like, you should really move off the layer 2 for the, production-related stuff. Like, it's really, really hard, regardless of, the fact that you might be, like, the expert in RSDP or STP, or you have everything predictably configured and stuff like that. It just takes very small amount of effort by someone that does not know, like, what you tried to achieve to actually break it, and don't get me wrong, I'm not bashing on layer two, but the thing is, like, it's proven not to have really easy troubleshooting. It's really hard. And, once you identified what actually went wrong, the remediation steps are really ballistic. Like, just think about it. Like, we needed to shut down all the redundant links.
Yeah,
exactly.
That's pretty drastic. So did you bring them up one by one after that? Then, okay. So
we slowly started. Exactly. And then the other thing is, like imagine, like, we had engineering group from US, from Europe, all around the world troubleshooting the same issue, right? Instead of, like, focusing on their project-related work.
So I was in one once, right, where I was sitting and I could read the guy's notes opposite, and he would actually said it was a network problem. And it was like, well, how'd you work that out? He goes, oh, because the power went out in the data center, therefore it took the router down, so the network was down. It's like, okay, I'm not buying that one. But the point is, if we're all looking at the same, if we're all coming from the same source of truth, if you're all looking at the same data, then we can all sort of work together. And that expedites. So you had to go through that process where you shut everything down. Although I will say, a well-operating spanning tree is a beautiful thing to behold when you actually see it sort of going in full flow there. But the reason that you had to go through these remediation steps was because, okay, let's strip it back and start again. Whereas if we're all looking, let's look at layer three, let's come into there or something there. But if we're all doing it, if we're now looking at this from the same, in the same context, basically, or from the same perspective, then it just expedites that whole process.
Which is really crucial point as well, right? It's actually quite surprising to find out how many companies out there don't have, like, centralized points of truth, right? It's really actually, not just from the people perspective or something like that, like, really, like, okay, what are we all looking at that's going to tell us that what we are seeing is actually what's actually happening, right? Yeah. I'm just like, we are speaking about events, but it can be for the configuration. Like, what's your source of truth for the configuration files, right? So, for example, inevitably your router or switch is going to go, like, dead because, like, CPU is going to go down, memory is going to fail or something like that. So you're going to get your RMA. Like, where do you apply the configuration file from? Do you have a central repository, or it lives, like, somewhere on someone's desktop, right? Or something like that. It's actually quite surprising to see how many organizations don't have that figured out. right? Yeah, and there are some beautiful solutions out there for exactly that. But yeah, like that, those are all quite interesting and challenging things that are, you know, network engineers and network operations teams, SREs, NREs, need to deal with on the daily basis.
Exactly. And I think I'm probably, you know, historically, I'm probably one of the guilty ones, mate. I was probably one of those sites you went to and I had all my configs written on scraps of paper. It's distributed around the place. So, but it was, to your point earlier, it's all held within one knowledge base. But then as we've got this situation now where we've had networks overlaid with networks, we've had different interdependencies, we have these complexity upon complexity because of necessity, and it's sort of driven that way there, that's impossible for one person to maintain or be able to go through. Or as we're talking about in the first story there, it was easy for me to look at that network because it wasn't very large, and to do that in the context of say, this is a path, I can look holistically across all these routing tables and see the whole down timer, okay, where's the problem at that point there? Mm-hmm. That'd be an impossible task to do now with sort of that many networks there. But the other thing I'll say about that, sorry, just before it goes, is that the source of truth also has to be in context. So I think, and this is my hypothesis, is that it's not for want of trying, you know, we've been talking about bridging the silos, talking about silos from there, but it's, they just don't simply have the capability to look at the data. So let's say the network data in a context that they'd understand. So an application person, if we gave them a BGP routing table or we gave them a trace file or a packet dump, they're going, where do I start? I mean, I've done it, mate. I've actually dumped a whole hex dump on someone's desk and go, it's on line 32, offset 30, there it is. Buys me time.
So
you're find
so
you are
guilty as charged.
Absolutely.
You know, the thing is like, you know, people need to move towards the solutions that are, you know, solving the blame games, right? So you need to have the really quick and fast identification whether the issue is application related or network related, and then like, just engage the right people. That drives the MTTR or mean time to resolution really down, and that's ultimately what decision makers are gonna ask you about, like why did it, you know, every single organization probably at this stage has something like, you know, debrief or postmortem of the event, and you know, one of the questions is like, always like, why did it last this much, and what are the steps that we can take, you know, to resolve this? And ultimately, the answer boils down to like, you know, having the ability to identify whether this was application related or you know, networking related, and what were the steps taken in that direction. The other thing that I wanted to say, Mike, just before we wrap this up, is actually, you know, I'm actually quite glad to see that people are started heavily pushing towards the simplicity in their designs and you know, architectures. And, you know, that's actually quite admirable, and that's quite good. What Da Vinci said, simplicity is ultimate sophistication, right? You know, and, you know, who am I to go against Da Vinci, right? The guy identified it centuries ago. So,
the man who drew a helicopter.
He's quite right.
Yeah, absolutely.
Exactly.
Absolutely. I'm very much an Occam's razor man, right? The simplest solution or the simplest answer is probably the correct one. That's so, yeah, totally.
I'm with you on that one. Like, you know, keep it stupid simple. KISS method works every single time.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Well, Kamal, I could actually talk to you all day, and I know we have in the past, we've sort of carried on and on. So I think what we'll do is we'll take this into another show. But absolute pleasure having you on, mate. Really, really enjoyed that.
Thank you so much, Mike. It's absolute pleasure to be on this podcast as always. So please keep them coming.
Thank you. Will do, mate. Will do. So that's our show. Don't forget to like, subscribe, and follow us on X, formerly known as Twitter, at ThousandEyes. And as always, if you have any questions, feedback, or guests you'd like to see featured on the show, please send us a note at internetreport@thousandeyes.com. So we hope you enjoyed this Halloween special episode. It was really fun to do, really enjoyed doing it. And if you're looking for a regular podcast to help keep your finger on the pulse of the health of the internet, check out our bi-weekly Internet Report Pulse Update podcast series, which is hosted by myself. So we've included the link on the screen above and in the description box below. Thanks again for tuning in today, and we'll catch you on the next episode.